following is for information purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. All opinions and views expressed by the contributors to this podcast are in a personal capacity only. They do not represent the views of Progressive Equity Research or any other organization mentioned in this podcast.
Money never sleeps, pal.
Okay, Friday the 12th of April. Jeremy, great to have you back. And it sounds like there's been a bit going on macro-wise this week, a bit of US inflation data and some closer to home information from the UK GDP front. Do you want to talk us through what you found interesting?
So I think the big story this week would be US inflation numbers generally higher than expected, you know, stifling hopes of Fed rate cut in June, which I think was the previous expectation, pushing that back to at least September now. But there is a growing number of commentators suggesting that the US will actually not cut rates this year at all, and that rate cuts are off the table. So if 2023 was about everyone talking about the soft landing, you know, maybe 2024 is people are going to be talking about the no landing, because the US economy just is too strong and you can't justify rate cuts on any basis other than a political basis.
Yeah. You've said previously that in your view, you know, the US economy is the only one that can sustain interest rates at these levels.
And so it seems.
Nothing seems to break it. Yeah.
Well, so far, but the bears will tell you that the lags are long and variable of higher for longer, but we're definitely in a case now for higher for even longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems to be never ending. So not surprisingly on that news, US Treasury yields moved for the first time in 6-7 months now, decisively above the 4.5% level. Bear in mind, turn of the year or November last year, they were at a low of 3.75%.
Okay.
So that's a big move, big decline in bond values, big increase in bond yields, as equity markets have continued to make progress, you know, maybe more modestly year to date, but they have, by and large, equity markets have gone up. And so the question is, how much longer can equity markets, global equity markets, diverge from US and global bond markets?
Yeah, that makes sense. And what about implications for UK interest rates?
Interest rate cuts can't be justified on an economic basis in the US. I would argue that European economies, including the UK, are screaming out for interest rate cuts. It's interesting that this week the ECB had their monthly meeting and kept rates on hold for the fifth month in a row, although they were dropping strong hints that they would probably like to cut rates. I think the pressure's building now on European central banks, the ECB and the Bank of England, on whether they would dare break the lead that they've typically taken from the Fed on recent rate decisions. And particularly in the UK, my hunch is that we won't go it alone. I think the memories of the trust debacle are too recent, and the risk, while the UK economy might be screaming out for lower rates, the risk is to the currency. So let's see if I'm wrong and the Bank of England do cut rates before the Fed. I think that could be very good news for UK equities. I have a concern what it might do to the pound, but I think for equity holders, I think that would be positive. And the other factor here to bear in mind is what's going on in China, of course, the world's second largest economy. And we've had Chinese inflation data this week, and to the extent that people, you know, can get any comfort from what China tells us about what's happening in their economy, it looks like they have a barely perceptible level of inflation. So inflation in March was at 0.1%, well below prior month, and the expected level of 0.5%. So at the moment, looks like we're seeing a sluggish recovery in the Chinese manufacturing sector, and the pricing environment is very benign. That is deflationary. So what's going on in the US is not the only picture. And I think, actually, to give the full picture of what's going on in the US, we've had PPI data yesterday in the US, and lo and behold, it was the PPI data was lower than expected. I think one interpretation could be that US inflation, or inflation generally, but dollar-based inflation is, while it's stubborn, it's coming down more slowly. What's happening in PPI and elsewhere probably just releases the pressure a bit over concerns that we're going to get a 1970s style sort of twin-pronged inflation attack.
Sort of runaway inflation. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because of all this has strengthened during the week, and we're now back above the 105 handle on the index value of the dollar, the DXY. So we're really getting this sense of growing, I think, dispersion of performance among the three largest economies, China, the US, and in Europe, suggesting that there is increased scope for foreign exchange volatility. And there does seem to be some interesting things going on in the precious metals market, with gold extending this very strong run, making all-time new highs in its price over recent weeks, pushing up towards the $2,500 an ounce level. This does seem to be driven by central bank buying, particularly from Asia and particularly in China. So that's worth keeping an eye on. But, you know, I think overall, that's the picture I see. And I think just to come back to the UK, UK GDP and industrial production data for February were better than expected. Month on month, GDP grew by 0.1% in February. But also the January GDP data was revised up to 0.3% from 0.2%. So pretty marginal numbers, but they're positive and they seem to be improving. So I think this sort of indicates that the UK has had a shallow recession in the second half of last year, from which we are now making a sluggish rate of recovery.
Okay, that's all interesting. It's good to hear. And then I suppose pivoting on in terms of the UK markets and the way that UK markets are feeling, I think this week's been, I suppose, dominated by some fairly negative commentary from one very large company, Shell, a couple of takeouts of small or mid-sized businesses, Centaur Media and Lok'nStore, and some really quite negative commentary from a small business, eTherapeutics, who are planning to delist. So
yeah,
although it might feel that the UK economy has maybe avoided the risk of a dramatic, you know, prolonged aggressive recession, the psychology or the sentiment in the UK markets still feels quite sort of sluggish and cautious. Does that seem fair?
I don't think it's necessarily people have lost all hope about the state of the economy, although mm-hmm. it's not difficult to get yourself in that position if you read the media. Yeah. There just seems to be, you know, when you get the Shell CEO and former CEO suggesting that it's considering listing in the US if the relative market valuations don't improve, well,
yeah.
In one sense, that's hardly a surprise because, I mean, if you're the CEO of a company and
your
job is to maximize the value for your shareholders, or it was in the world I was brought up in anyway, it seems to be a lot of other things besides these days as well. But
that's true.
You know, then you shouldn't be surprised if they're going to say that kind of thing when the relative valuation of Chevron, ExxonMobil and et al. Are substantially higher and have been for some time. The eTherapeutics thing, I think, is slightly more idiosyncratic, but I think you probably know a bit more about that than I do. But
Well, it's a very small business, well, relatively small business. And they, I think the issue there really relates to some negative comments they were making about AIM.
Yes.
And their perception of the lack of institutional UK interest. And obviously, you know, that could be company specific.
Particularly early stage biotech, which has always been a bit of a problem for dividend loving UK investors.
Yes, hasn't necessarily sat well with the UK institutional market. No. I agree with that. And so, yeah, it could be sector specific, could even be company specific. But some of their comments about the fact that they viewed there to be a larger pool of capital available for unlisted companies than listed companies was it's sort of a strange way of looking at things. And normally, you know, when companies look to IPO, they're looking to access these large global pools of capital. And it feels, certainly from their comments, they didn't feel that worked for them, which is sad. But I think a lot of that, it really does come down to sentiment and psychology. And, you know, the UK investment landscape could recover very quickly if you start to see some, you know, better sentiment showing through, increased confidence in both the economy and the performance of the quoted businesses that are out there, and potentially, you know, investors looking for IPOs to come through during the course of the year. And I think a lot of these things are driven by the mindset of investors, and those mindsets can turn on a dime when things start to improve and start to feel like they're improving. So it can be, I think, probably quite self-fulfilling on the way up as well as sort of self-defeating on the way down.
And I think it's a cyclical thing. more than a structural thing. I mean, maybe there's some things that I'm sure there are some institutional tweaks and stuff we can do at the edges to make our system work better. But it's a cyclical thing, but it's something that's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah, it's a long, slow cycle, yeah.
Yeah, at least the last decade. You know, these big trend changes in markets don't happen overnight. At least in the early stages, it happens quite slowly. And I, like this week, so we've had, there's evidence that the UK people running public companies are just getting on with things. The number of share buybacks being announced.
Yeah.
Equity is being retired at a rapid rate in the UK equity market, and highlighted Mears this week as a interesting, slightly boring, but very successfully cash generative business in the UK mid-market. And it has retired 11% of its equity in the last 12 months. And it's still built up surplus cash that is now saying it might use for, it sounds like it might be on the acquisition trail, who knows, but that's what it seems like. And you know, capital is being recycled through M&A activity as well. And, you know, we've had Centaur and Lokkenstor this week. Centaur, it's just sort of an early stage indication they are in talks with someone. Lokkenstor was a recommended offer. There's nearly 400 million of equity that is being retired from the UK market in that deal in the not too distant future. So it might not be the dream scenario for UK equities, but it enhances the returns that will come when liquidity eventually finds its way back. And people, you know, from this sort of financial, global financial market that we operate in.
Well, hopefully it will. And looking to the short term, what's over the next week or so? We've got a bit of data coming through next week.
Next week, it's pretty quiet, actually, on the macro front. But we've got some Chinese GDP data and retail sales data from China on Tuesday, along with UK unemployment numbers. And I think the big one for the UK market next week is on Wednesday when we get UK inflation data for March, where the expectation is for a decline year on year from the last 3.4% print to a print of closer to 3%, 3 to 3.1% seems to be the expectation. So I think with this week, you know, we've had stronger than expected GDP data today. If we get that followed up by continuing sort of indication that the unemployment rate in the UK is benign and that inflation is trending down, I think that would be considered a good run of events for the UK market. Albeit if the market gets hold of the thought that we're going to cut rates ahead of the Fed, just keep your eye on sterling. And I think that's going to be the main concern of policymakers. Yeah.
Yeah. Just on that interest rate thing, is it possible that the UK and the European Central Bank has talked to each other about these things? And could there be any kind of concerted or acting together to move up?
I thought I was the conspiracy theorist.
No, I just remember, I think it was during COVID and 2008, 2009, that the central bankers did talk to each other. And I remember sometimes they even announced rate changes on the same day, sort of surprising the markets. Do you think they're still talking?
Absolutely. I'm sure they are. What they conclude from those discussions and how deliberate they will be, I don't know. But yeah, one would hope they are. They go to the same conferences together. They've all been to the same universities and they follow the same economic religion. So yeah, I think that is the case. But what that actually means and the degree to which the ECB and the Bank of England are prepared to go it alone, as I said before, I don't think they will. But in some ways, I hope I'm proven wrong.
Yeah, might be nice if they did, but we'll wait and see. Great. Okay, well, a lot to look forward to next week, and we'll catch up this time next Friday.
Okay, great.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Brought to you by Progressive Equity.
This is your wake-up call, pal. Go to work.